a very good afternoon. It is Niall Boylan, and welcome along to today's podcast. And it is going to be a very, very interesting one. We are going to be talking about COVID-19. I know you're saying to yourself, Niall, please, we've had enough of that. We've had years of it, actually. We've lost 3 years of our lives. But lockdowns, masks and vaccines. We want to take your texts. 085 100 2255. That's 085 100 2255. Firstly, lockdowns. And Ireland, of course, had the second longest lockdown in the world. Lockdowns disproportionately affect vulnerable populations. Those in lower socioeconomic brackets face greater financial hardship and limited access to resources and healthcare. The inadequacies exposed by lockdowns highlighted the need for a targeted support from the most vulnerable members of society. From recent studies, in comparison to countries who had little or no restrictions, infections and deaths were no higher. And in fact, in some countries with little or no restrictions and less infections, they actually had less infections, should I say. Businesses closed down, the nighttime economy was destroyed, and some say it may never even recover because habits had changed. People's livelihoods were destroyed, which in turn caused huge mental health and physical health issues. The elderly were left alone to die, and that was quite sad to see in many occasions. And in general, people lost nearly 3 years of their lives and quality of life. Even with strict restrictions in place, the virus can still find its way to spread and making it difficult to completely control its transmission. The long-term health effects of lockdowns will be felt for years with undiagnosed cancers, heart disease and other life-limiting conditions that were not attended to during COVID-19's lockdowns. It seems collateral damage and incalculable deaths or reduction in quality of life will be felt for years. In conclusion, masks, although a useful tool in the mitigation of transmission of COVID-19, it seems, did not work as effectively as anticipated. Their limitations in filtering small particles were inconsistent. Potential for promoting risky behaviour, variability in the types of masks people were using, and the multifaceted nature of the virus itself are all factors that contributed to their limited or suggested in a recent gold standard study that they had little or no effect. Not only that, people turned against each other because it was inferred that if you didn't wear a mask, you were like walking loaded gun waiting to spread the infection. Then came, of course, the vaccines. We all clambered for the vaccines and were promised this utopian idea that it would stop the virus and you would never get COVID. Then it turned into, okay, it won't stop the virus, but you won't get sick. Then it turned into, well, actually, you might get sick, but you won't end up in hospital. And then it went on and on. You see where I'm going with that, by the way. The latest admission from Pfizer is that they never actually tested the vaccine for reducing transmission. But wait, did the experts not suggest it would stop the spread? We were misinformed one day after another. Then came the vilification of those, for whatever reasons, their own choices, decided not to get vaccinated. They are irresponsible. They're murderers. They should lose their jobs. They should be segregated in society. And indeed, they were, as they weren't allowed into public places, restaurants and bars, venues. They couldn't even leave the country on a plane. It then turned out that the vaccination, or the vaccinated, were just as less likely to spread COVID as those who were vaccinated. So it was all in vain. But maybe the vaccines themselves weren't in vain. We'll find out in a second. Did the vaccines make any real difference? Did the lockdowns make any real difference? Did the masks make any difference? Looking at the evidence from the countries with lower uptake of vaccines, it seems it didn't really make a huge amount of difference. And the last part was encouraging children to wear masks, which again, studies showed made little or no difference in comparison to those who didn't make that social sacrifice. Also encouraging parents to get their children vaccinated against the virus that were little or no risk anyway to them. In fact, some countries even suggested that they would ban the vaccine for those under the age of 18 because of what they call a risk analysis. But how did COVID affect you? Was your job lost? Did you lose a loved one to the virus or for other related reasons? Did you wear masks and adhere to all the restrictions? And how did it affect you and your life? That's what we want to know today. Or is it all just a distant memory? You can text us or WhatsApp us on 085 100 225. I'm joined in the studio by my two guests, Bill Tormley, Professor Bill Tormley, who's the Editor-in-Chief of the Irish Journal of Medical Science, and Ivor Cummins, a biochemical engineer. Bill, just let me go to you first. 2.5 years of our lives were lost, essentially. A lot of people can't even remember what they did during those times. We struggle now when people say 2020. Now, was that the time of the virus? Was it all worth it? The lockdowns, the masks, the clambering for the vaccines, which really weren't as effective as we thought they were going to be. Was it all worth it?
In a word, yes. the problem the reality is that Wuhan and then Lombardy published data in February of the year the whole thing started. And at this stage, I'm right with you, Niall. I can't even remember what year it was. They published data showing that the death rate was really confined to those above 60 years of age. And it rapidly rose for people above 60 years of age and for people with other diseases as well. So in other words, it helped people with other diseases die early. And one of the things that it did in society was that those people who were vulnerable and elderly, including a small number of people who were in transplant, who were younger in age and were in receipt of transplants or immune suppression or cancer treatments, all of those had a much higher rate of death because they had multi-disease. And what happened was that people over 60, it was highlighted that this was the problem in Lombardy in Italy. And it was the problem where all these coffins were being loaded up. Do you remember all that stuff?
I remember receiving WhatsApp messages from people of the streets of China and people were lying dead on the streets and all this. But that turned out to be a little bit of a fallacy because people weren't really dropping dead on the streets from what we saw in the West, certainly anyway. But in saying that, I think everybody, we all panicked. We all got really worried. And when Leo Varadkar stood on the steps in Washington that particular day, coming up to St. Patrick's Day, and the suggestion was that in the next year, 100,000 people or up to 100,000 people could die. And these predictions, which thankfully were well out there, they were nowhere close to that in our country, for example, or many other countries. But we all did get worried. And of course, we all faced the unknown together, including the politicians, the decision makers. Nobody really knew. So we had to be cautious. And everybody gets that.
I don't really subscribe to that now. Because The Lancet published the data from Wuhan and the data from Lombardy. And the data clearly showed, if you were bothered to read it and look at it, that it was people over 60 were the real victims of all of this. And what happened here? Panic. We even got to the stage where locking kids into school and the incidence of the disease. There's a query as to whether or not flu killed more kids with diseases than COVID. And that's actually a fact. What we did here was we panicked to a large extent. And the difficulty was that elderly people were coming into hospitals as per usual, but they were dying in very high numbers in the district general hospitals that are across this country, the level 4 hospitals and the level 3 hospitals. And then it was the virus was identified and it was a respiratory virus. So what did we do? We took us a long time for NFET and all the people to condescend to you who know everything to decide that we should be masked. And I don't believe a lot of the data saying that masks do not work. I'm not in that.
I'm only saying the latest gold standard studies suggest they're of little or no effect.
Gold standard is the point I'm making. They're not gold standard. And the other thing about it is that masks actually do reduce the incidence, because I'll tell you the extraordinary thing that happened in the first winter where we had all this. The incidence of flu virtually disappeared. Do you remember
did it? See, and that was worldwide. Did it actually disappear, or were we just re-identifying it?
It was in countries where there was a lot of masking, and the Eastern countries always have a hell of a lot of masking in winters, particularly when there's respiratory viruses around Singapore and all these sort of places. That's just a fact. But what happened here? We decided that the people who were in NFET were omniscient. They knew everything and that they would keep us on the right path. So what did they do? They picked they decided to lock us down, and they picked 5 kilometers out of their, I don't know where that came from, the ether somewhere.
We all remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
People were taken to criminal courts for actually being outside 5 kilometres from their house. Did you ever hear anything as absurd in a democracy?
I mean, it was a disaster. We had Gardaí at Dublin Airport arresting people and fining people €1,000 for even attempting to go on holidays. This is before we actually brought in the ban on flights and the COVID vaccines. They were banning people from going on holidays and fining them. We had guards stopping people from literally setting foot over their 5 kilometre range. Thankfully, I never had to adhere to it because being in the journalism industry, I had a pass, a free pass. So that never really affected me. But it was absolutely barmy. It was a barmy time. Let me just come to Ivor. Ivor, you've listened to everything that Bill has said there. You know, I would have thought we all kind of panicked at the start. And I think even you, Ivor, because you're a skeptic, surely you panicked like everybody else at the start because it was the unknown, Ivor.
No, in fairness, and again, I'm not being arrogant here, but, you know, after 20 years in crisis management, you know, panic is the worst possible thing. And no matter how much you feel like panicking, you never do. But I'll briefly say my wife came to me in, I think it was March 2020, around mid-March, and said, should we get masks? But I'd already seen the Diamond Princess data. You know, that was February 2020.
Yeah.
And I said, look, this is in, the cruise ship. And there were 3,700 people and around 1,600 were kind of guests, if you will, very elderly generally. And a few people died. It was 7 or 8 at the first count in their late 70s and 80s. And I did a quick calculation like Professor Michael Levitt, and I roughly put it at a 0.2% excess mortality, maybe average age 80 with comorbidities. And that's exactly what it turned out to be in all the data. So I just happened to know that.
But the suggestion at the start, we remember the suggestion at the start, particularly coming from the UK, Professor Ferguson, I think was his name, and he was suggesting like 300,000 or 400,000 people dying, and he was suggesting, you know, a morbidity rate, or should I say a mortality rate of 5%. I mean, thankfully, it was nowhere near that. I mean, we weren't talking about the bubonic plague here, but that was what we were led to believe at the start.
Niall, there was a huge outbreak of death in nursing homes in elderly people here at the beginning.
Bill, nobody's dismissing the fact that a lot of elderly people died. But
I know. I'm only passing a comment to you.
No. I absolutely accept that. And nobody, by the way, in this show is going to dismiss the fact that people did die.
Because one of the policy decisions that was taken was to remove people from hospitals and put them into nursing homes. And how many of these people had a pre-move COVID-19 test? A hell of a lot of them did not.
Oh, that was a huge... We do know what a massive mistake that was, Bill. But sorry, Ivor, just to finish what you were saying
Hang on, Bill, just for a second.
Sorry, Ivor, finish what you're saying.
Yeah, I think we need to focus on some real kernels, some real core points. So going back to Ferguson. So Ferguson, that was a non-peer-reviewed paper, and it was the only real evidence that drove the madness that followed. But if you go back a little, people need to understand that in February, Bruce Aylward, the chief envoy of the WHO, WHO, was in China, and he pointed out a Gompertz curve, which we came to be very familiar with, and he literally said that China did that, i.e. made that curve with their lockdowns. And then he uttered the immortal words, all of the world will have to do these. So Ferguson and his team in Imperial College that have taken a few hundred million dollars from foundations and pharma interests, to be quite honest, they went ahead and ran with that lockdowns would be needed to save lives. But the reality is, we knew from the data from Diamond Princess and other cruise ships, we knew it would be around 0.2%, not outside the envelope of a severe flu. And another thing that's critical for people to know is that Sweden, with no lockdown, no masks, and kids up to 16 in school, throughout, by order of the government, you cannot take your kids out. With none of the craziness, they ended up with the lowest or one of the lowest excess mortalities in all of Europe.
But they do have a different demographic. I mean, our older population over 65 is 16%. It's quite high.
That's a crucial point, Niall. Thank you. They have a similar aged demographic to the UK. And if you take Stockholm compared to Manchester, they have the same people density and age demographic, but they had half the mortality, Stockholm versus Manchester. So the data is important. I'd say one more thing. if you look at a graph of median age per country against COVID deaths from PCR, right, it's a perfect line. The death rate per country directly tallies with the median age, the demographic. It's completely independent of lockdowns and masks. Completely.
Okay, sorry, Bill Tormey. Well, Bill, would you accept that? That countries with older populations obviously had higher debt rates? Well, I mean, that would be a logical thing to say, even without COVID.
No, I agree with that, but I don't quite go the whole hog. What I'm trying to say is that without doing a prospective experiment, you really do not get the true answers. My big crib about NFET and all the carry-on the 6-1 news, unquestioned every day of the week for months on end, the biggest propaganda exercise I've seen in a hell of a long time. Ed Goebbels would have been very proud of it, to be quite honest, because it worked a dream. And it nearly finished up with a guy being given a chair in Trinity with, I won't pass any further, I don't want to be sued. But basically, you need to do a big experiment anytime you're going to have a population or any other medical intervention. You've got to have a control group. And they absolutely refused to consider any downside to any suggestion that they were making. Bonkers. And this was going on all the time.
But not only that, we did hear at one stage, wasn't there a comment by Neffet, or Enfet as some people call them, that they had been, one of them had been out on a Saturday night in a taxi and had spotted people enjoying themselves. So they became judge and jury of the nation at one point, and they weren't even questioned. They were never. Yeah. At one stage, Leo Varadkar did question them live on primetime at their decisions in relation to going back into a level 5 lockdown. We were giving them fancy names, of course.
I thought that was wild.
Yeah, and he questioned it, and he pulled his horns in the next day.
5 lockdown was an absurdity. I went to the UK in the middle of level 5 lockdown in Ireland late in 2020, and Ireland had level 5 lockdown and mandatory masks everywhere. The UK, it was like pretty much freedom, just like Sweden at that time.
It's like Boris in hospital. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing as well was just absurd. But I went over for a week, you know, and it was great and came back. But in every single case of comparison, and the reason you might not quite need an experiment, Professor Tormey, is you need to see some correlation or some real world empirical signal to tease out with an experiment. But the beauty here is we have over 50 published papers that have assessed all the countries and all the counties in the US all over the world for lockdown, right? And there is no signal. So a la Professor Karl Popper, right? That's a black swan become Electra.
Can I just throw in here, and before we go back to Bill? Bill, you know, I think it was in Pennsylvania or Philadelphia that did a massive report in relation to what they call the incalculable deaths over the next 50 years. I.e., you know, during the lockdowns, people's habits changed. They might have eaten more. They wouldn't have gone for that knee operation or the hip replacement. They didn't get that diagnosis for cancer that they should have gotten. They might die 5 years earlier. All of those kind of things. And they said it's incalculable. But they reckoned that those deaths and that quality of life accumulated would be roughly 15 million people. Now, that's just a guess because you can't really measure it. It's not something that's measurable. So realistically, as much as the lockdowns might have made a tiny bit of a difference, and I'm saying a tiny bit of a difference, I know Ivor's nodding his head and disagreeing, but realistically, you can compare that with the damage that was done by lockdowns, you know, to people's mental health, people's financial health, their physical health, businesses closing down, the economy in a mess. I mean, and that has a knock-on effect, of course, in the services we can provide for people. The medical service was a mess. You can't deny that it maybe just wasn't worth any of it.
I don't agree. I think your conclusion there at the end is probably wrong. You can't say that because I'm just looking at a paper here that I've just dealt with this morning, and it's titled Locked In and Locked Out Sequence, Sequelae of a Pandemic for Distressed and Vulnerable Teenagers in Ireland. So the damage is coming out systematically as we speak. The only other thing is that the disease programs for checking large bowel cancers and other cancers actually weren't kicked into touch for a long time because there was such panic that the outpatients and everything else were all closed. So nothing was being done in a whole lot of very, very serious disease areas.
Oh, you got breast cancer, cervical cancer, prostate cancer. None of them were being checked anymore. Everything was just abandoned.
Because there was a panic. And then remember this, Niall, that there were unfortunate instances of some known-named doctors who died from getting COVID in their workplace in Ireland. Do you remember that?
Well, yeah, I do, but hang on. But that was highlighted in the news. I think there was two doctors, right? That was highlighted in the news. And I'm sorry
for
that.
That's the point I'm making. But hang on. It was huge.
Yeah, but hang on for a second. If we go back through history, how many doctors have caught contagious diseases in hospitals over the last 100 years and died? It is a risk of the job, isn't it? You know that as a professor yourself.
Yeah,
it's a risk
of
the job.
Of course,
yeah. Yeah. The same way as when you're examining a child in your GP's office and they happen to have chicken pox or whatever it is. I mean, there's a risk to the job. Okay, now let's just move on from the lockdown. Sorry, Ivor, you want to say something very quickly, Ivor?
Well, just one last point. I mean, I'm a corporate guy and it's easy. Just judge by their actions. So they were threatening us in the summer of 2020. Well, A, they brought in mandatory masks with prison sentences and fines in the middle of the summer.
Absolutely outrageous, Ivor, in my
for
opinion.
For a seasonal virus, we knew wouldn't be back until October, and the hospitals were empty, and mandatory masks were brought in. So that was a very interesting action. The other one was they had set up expanded hospital capacity, the Nightingales in the UK, and somewhere west of Dublin here. And while we were all being told about a potential Spanish flu second wave and terrible things happening this winter, what did they actually do? They dismantled all the capacity around the world. And the same with the ship in New York with all the capacity. Even though New York was very hard hit with the racial minorities and the density, etc., they never even used the ship. So, you know, actions speak louder than words in terms of intent.
Can I just say this, Niall? It's easy for Ivor to say that, but actually incompetence and mess up is part of the action. And, you know, the great generals, Rommel and all these guys, were able to organize things. And it depends, the impact of things with disorganization, negative consequences, is usually much greater than positive consequences with disorganization. The only thing that they did not do, and I insist on this, they did not set up a trial to have something here done with this group and something different done with this group. So you could see what was any good. Look. There were people in the courts for being caught outside 5 kilometres away from their houses. Absolutely.
So there was one woman.
Stuff.
Was there one woman in court?
Yeah, but hold
was
on. Do you know why
she was brought to court five times for not wearing a mask, and they were going
that
to jail her?
I think, or somewhere. Yeah. You know something, Niall? It's unbelievable that they get away with this, and it's even worse that the civil service and the politicians vote this stuff into law. My God.
Okay, we've a lot to get to, and I want to, firstly, we can talk about the stupidity, and I'm looking at that video a second ago, and we see the hospitals, and we see Gardaí walking around empty streets there, and, you know, I don't recognise our city, I don't recognise our country and what we did at that particular time, but the stupidity of the 9 euro meal that you had to have, as if COVID knew how much you had to eat, and the time you were allowed to spend in a restaurant.
It's Dave Allen stuff, isn't it? It's really comedy stuff.
You actually couldn't make it up, right? And you had people fighting with each other. I was in Tesco's one day and I sneezed. Security came over and asked me to leave. I swear, I felt like a murderer in the place.
Perfectly right in your case.
But the other thing that is,
it's expensive. It's expensive stupidity. So $4 trillion, that's $4,000 billion, went to the richest top strata of society just during 2020. And the number of billionaires doubled. That's a direct result of lockdown.
Why, Ivor? Why?
Oh, because all of the big corporates...
Seriously, why? Yeah.
Why? Because all of the big corporates were open for business, and Amazon, etc. And the rich are clever, and they invested very wisely in many cases, and new businesses popped up. But all the money came from the middle class and the working class. And that's a crucial point. This was the biggest wealth kind of hoards
redistribution
in history.
Yes, the separation of wealth. The separation of wealth has certainly been extended. Now, I suppose we've dealt with the lockdowns. I think we all agree it was most of it was unnecessary. We have a little bit of a different opinion with the masks.
We really haven't talked about now.
Okay, well, I'm going to come to that.
I'm really annoyed about the schools. I really am.
Young children, you know, we didn't see their smiles anymore. We saw children sitting in cold classes during the winter, of course, because all the windows were told to leave all the windows open, freezing cold, with masks on them. A lot of the time, by the way, they weren't even in school, so they lost a year of their education at least. And we had people demanding, you know, that we close the schools again. We had the zero COVID people out there. You remember that lot? The few professors that were involved in the hashtag zero COVID.
I know some of them.
demanding that we get it down to zero, which was basically an impossibility. So firstly, Bill, just get on to the schools. Was that completely unnecessary? Make it as brief as you can. Was that completely unnecessary, closing them
Absolutely.
Down?
Absolutely. If you look at the data that's even published right now from the HSE and the Health Protection Surveillance Crowd, you see the very small number of people of a young age who are now testing positive. And there's hundreds of elderly people still testing positive for COVID. And the death rate, it's arguable, as I said in the book that I published there in November, but it's arguable that the flu did more damage, killed more kids than COVID. And I think that's probably right.
I think if we PCR or, you know, antigen test, which were words we all became very familiar with, if we did it to everybody in the population today, I think we'd find the infection rate is probably still as high as it was then. And we'd probably find that people are dying with COVID-19, inverted commas, is probably pretty much around the same as it was
right,
in the middle of it.
There's other fantastic...
But yet we're open and we're living our lives and the world hasn't collapsed.
Hold on for a second, Niall. There's one other thing that they're doing. There's a friend of mine, Kevin Carson, who's in charge of ICU in Temple Street. He's a great guy. And they have little devices in there that will, you know, the lateral slide test, the antigen test for COVID. But they have the same for parainfluenza, and a whole lot of RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, a whole lot of these viruses. And they're able to tell now what the kids have, let them go. And they're now discovering in adults that respiratory syncytial virus is actually killing a hell of a lot of adults. And when I was growing up, as they say, training and all that sort of stuff, that was regarded as benign. And it was an annual event up to the age of 5 in kids at the time. So there's a whole lot of stuff that keeps coming out.
Well, I personally believe that young children particularly...
It can confound the data on some of the COVID stuff if it's not properly...
Well, the fact that we didn't allow children to catch viruses, we didn't allow them to catch, you know, rhinoviruses and all those other viruses when they were very young, probably did a fair amount of damage to their immune systems. But I got to move on. But in relation to now vaccines, of course, vaccines, you know, this was the golden chalice. This was what we all waited for, that, you know, every day, is the vaccine coming out? When it did, it was almost like a lottery system to see who could get it first. They should have done it by alphabet. It would have been better. I mean, we were killing one another. Which one did you get? I got the Pfizer. I got the Moderna. We all became experts in biochemistry all of a sudden. We knew everything about antigen tests. We knew everything about everything. So anyway,
there's a few people are on television all the time making sure the whole population...
We had top Irish professors on RT television sewing their own masks and dancing around inside inflatable bubbles.
It was
bonkers. Okay, it was hilarious for all the wrong reasons when I look back at it now. Yeah. But here's the thing, right? Where I was going with this, the vaccines. At the start, the promise was, and this was the promise, it was tweeted by top scientists in this country, the vaccine is now available, go out and get it and you won't get COVID-19. It'll stop the spread of COVID-19. It didn't, Bill. People still got COVID-19, probably no less than they did if they didn't get vaccinated.
I know,
hang on. You can answer me. You can question that in a minute if you want to. And also, the suggestion now, or more recently by Pfizer, was they never actually tested to see if it stopped transmission. And then we kind of got, okay, well, it won't stop you from getting it, but you won't get very sick. And then people did get very sick. It won't stop you getting very sick, but it'll stop you going to hospital. And people did go to hospital. So it didn't seem to make the difference they said it was going to make. The promise didn't live up to the promise. Would you agree with that?
That's true. But the fact is that without it, there would have been, in my opinion, a hell of a death rate. I think that the antibody effects the stimulation of the immune system by these vaccines was hugely advantageous for society. However, I think there was a lot of politics played in two areas of the world. One was in the UK and the other was in China, because the UK had an interest in the Oxford University version, and the Oxford University version then was associated with a whole lot of side effects, including cardiac ones, which were a huge problem. And this occurred, and cardiomyopathies then became a big problem with vaccines. But the overall pluses and minuses, in my looking at the data, and I was following this all the time, except not on television. I don't watch that stuff. the basic thing is that the total number of people who were dying reduced as a consequence, I think, of the vaccines.
Okay,
hold on for a second.
Yeah.
It didn't mean that the vaccine stopped the disease in its tracks. It did not. And all the things that you listed at the beginning there all happened, and they're all true.
But look what we did to people. What we did was turn people against each other. People who decided through their own choice not to get the vaccine.
No, that's a different thing.
And we essentially called them murderers. We wouldn't let them out. We fired them from their jobs. You remember that within the HSE themselves, anybody who didn't get vaccinated was moved or might have lost their job. The same thing happened in the NHS in the UK. We've seen people, you know, being segregated.
Who makes these decisions, Niall?
That politicians. Vaccine passports. You were like a leper unless you had a vaccine.
It's not politicians. It's the nomenclatura. It's the background guys. The guys in the Kremlin make it all.
The politicians were the ones that were turning people against each other.
These decisions was he making, and they were following up. But we heard
politicians condemn people who didn't get vaccines, calling them stupid and calling them all sorts of things. We had presenters on radio, top presenters on radio, demanding people get them. And if they didn't get them, they should be ashamed of themselves. Ivor, you didn't get vaccinated and you decided not to. By the way, I did. But you didn't get vaccinated, Ivor. You didn't believe the promise. You've heard what Bill said. He believes that if the vaccinations weren't available, the debt rate would have been higher. Do you believe
it? It would have been horrendous. Yeah,
okay, well, let Ivor just respond to that.
So, basically, I have a general rule in life, right? I'm a master technologist. I'm 30 years in complex problem solving. No idiot is going to tell me to do something that I know is utterly nonsensical for me to do. At 54, with a vitamin D of 160 nanogram and all the other blood metrics, my risk from COVID was nothing. And I got it. And I had to not work for around half a day, right? It's absurd to have it. Over 70 with conditions, perhaps, when you look at the stats. Now, Professor Norman Fenton in the UK has done the best analytics, gotten data from ONS, from Freedom of Information, and he's put together some fantastic data. The best you can say is the impact on mortality broadly, it's hard to find a signal. I'll just leave it at that. And the natural evolution...
Something Fenton, what was her...
Professor Norman Fenton, and I can send all of his analyses after. Excellent work. He runs a team in evidence-based analytics and statistics, so he actually specializes in these questions. Mm-hmm. So he did a great job. But essentially, the death rate from COVID cumulative, we had predicted in 2020, inevitably, when a new virus or new member of the coronavirus family comes in, it's not a new virus, you will get an impact that's big at first and then receding, like a stone skipping on a pond. It's the nature of the human immune system. So if you draw the natural evolution of what you would expect from mortality, right?
Yeah.
That's what roughly happened anyway. Now, I will say another thing. The Lancet study came out from the same people like Ferguson and claimed 20 million lives saved. You know what they did?
No.
They modeled who would have died. And what they said would have died is a line going up in the sky, even though the worst first wave had already hit. They drew a line going right up and said, this is what would have died, but this is what did die. So we saved myriad.
Well, okay.
The point is, the natural mortality curve was heading straight there.
Okay, I need to get into the final question because we're running out of time. But Bill, I want to get you.
I want to pass one comment.
Okay.
One of the big problems in medicine, Ivor, is that you can't know enough mathematics. And I'm an editor of a journal, and I don't know enough mathematics to critically analyze virtually any of this. And I've no skeptic around, other than Colin McCarthy, who'll tell me I'm wrong. I've no skeptics around to tell me, oh, that's crap, you know, I mean, at the end of the day. But I do my best.
Okay, final thing. In relation to the vaccine, and there's people on both sides of the fence in the argument in relation to vaccines, Bill. Yes. But, you know, when it came to children who were not at risk from COVID-19.
Yeah, I agree with you.
We didn't see children under the age of 16 dying in general. It didn't really happen.
Hold on.
The idea that we encourage parents vilify them if they didn't get their children vaccinated, was that the wrong thing to do?
Yes. The bottom line is that the side effects were one in 99,000 and something female children, and one in, I think it was 2,000 or 3,000, some very small number of males. In other words, the risk to females was witheringly small. And the risk, this is kids we're talking, and the risk to males was appreciable.
This is the vaccine. You're talking about the vaccine itself.
Yes, I am. I'm talking about side effects of the vaccine. That's basically what I'm saying. And I think that ethically, there's a very strong argument for saying that the kids should not have been vaccinated.
Well, isn't that why many countries and many states in America now have said that they don't recommend vaccines for people under the age of 18, COVID-19 vaccines? Because, of course, the risk of COVID-19 for under the age of 18 was very low, but the risk of the vaccine was probably a little bit higher.
And the side effects were appreciable. Yeah.
Okay, listen, guys, overall, because I have to finish, just two statements from the two of you. The whole thing, the 3 years, if you could sum it up in two sentences, Bill.
It's called Tony Holohan Rules OK.
And Ivor, if you could sum up the whole thing.
I bet you didn't think that one, Niall.
No, I didn't. I did. That was the last thing I thought you were going to say. Ivor, if you could sum up the whole thing, the whole 2.5 years, 3 years.
I'd say from March 2020, we experienced in the West a complete collapse of the scientific method, scientific thinking and ethics. And that's it in a nutshell. Sweden led the way. Anders Tegnell is a hero who proved out the science. And the mandates and what was done was actually a form of terrorism against the citizens by the governments.
Because
I don't want to do hyperbole, but let's be honest, to be forcefully medicated in the face of an absolute absurd justification.
Okay, thank you. Listen. Ivor Cummins, Professor Bill Tormey, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. We're going to take some of your calls in a second. Thank you both, lads. We're going to take some of your calls. You can text or WhatsApp right now on 085 100 2255. We're going to talk to Graham in a few minutes and also Paul Travaux, the restaurateur, straight after this break.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085 100 2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.
All right, welcome back to the show. All right, if you want to text or WhatsApp, you can right now on 085 100 2255. Let me go to Graham. One of my favourite callers onto this show, because he always has his own little argument and doesn't care what anybody thinks. Graham, good afternoon to you.
It is nice. It's a second lovely afternoon, mate.
It is a beautiful afternoon. And it was beautiful too while we were on our 5Ks only a year and a half ago, and we couldn't step outside our 5K boundary. That was a beautiful time, but it seemed to be a waste of time.
Where I live, very sorry for people who this doesn't apply to. That was actually just fine. I have loads of fields and horses and lakes next to the river.
It was just like normal, really, wasn't it? It was just like normal. So, I mean,
the amount of people who live within 5K me seem to increase dramatically during that time, though.
In relation to what we did and the way we behaved towards each other, and the way the government behaved towards its citizens, and the way NPHET behaves towards the government, in other words, they were running the country, do you think it was all worthwhile? The lockdowns, the masks, which evidence suggests now played little or no role whatsoever in, you know, bringing down the curve or flattening the curve, as they called it. The vaccines, which may have had some effect, particularly in those who are older, to extend their lives. But generally speaking, in younger people, didn't really have a huge effect. Do you think it was all worth it?
With the vaccines, absolutely. I will just very briefly say, in relation to that ignorant langer you had on a few seconds ago saying he doesn't want to...
You don't like Ivor, okay, that's fine. Yeah. Well, you don't agree with him, but that's fine. You don't have to get into personal insults, but you don't like him, that's fine.
I know Fraser Eric. He doesn't want to gauge in hyperbole, but it was terrorism.
Well, he believes.
But hang on.
What he's referring to is the way the Irish government terrorized people into making decisions. There were people being arrested, threatened with jail if they didn't wear a mask.
You can disagree with it all you please, as you do, but it's not bloody terrorism.
Okay.
And especially in Ireland, we are reasonably well acquainted to what terrorism is. So what he was doing was deeply disingenuous. He said, I don't want to engage in hyperbole, while he engages in quite a feckin' offensive hyperbole.
Okay. You didn't like it. Let's move on from that. Do you believe at that time, was it worth it, the way we turned people against each other with vaccine passports, people terrorizing each other, if that's a word I'm allowed to use now. not on a grand scale for not wearing a mask. We were, you know, horrified. But we, at one stage, it was described as walking down the street with a loaded gun if you didn't have a mask on you. That's, I heard that on TV by somebody in power at one stage suggesting that. I mean,
the earth is flat on TV too now. It doesn't make it true.
No. But did we completely go over the top? Did we lose the run of ourselves?
Right. Obviously, I disagree largely with your characterization of just about everything. But were mistakes made? Well, yes, of course they were. Just by definition, you were talking with a pandemic on something that they did not have full knowledge of. So are they going to overcompensate in some ways, undercompensate in other ways, or just get things playing out wrong? Yes. Are there going to be people, I would think, especially in political class, given our political class association with business, who are going to use it as an opportunity just to make money? Yes. But do vaccines work? Yes. Do the COVID vaccines work? Yes, they do. Masks, can we debate? Yes. And obviously it very much depends on the quality of them and all that kind of stuff. But there is debate to be had.
What about the loss of business? What about business owners? I'm going to come to Paul Trudeau in a second, who was quite outspoken about that, I'm sure. Actually, let's just go to Paul, actually. That's what we probably just do now. Paul, good evening to you. Good afternoon to you.
How are you now?
Welcome along to the podcast. Paul, you listened to Graham. He believes part of it was worth it. Other parts weren't. I wanted to get onto business. You're a restaurateur, so you lost business for 2 years.
Yeah, we lost more than business. And it wasn't just restaurants. It was the entire hospitality industry, the music industry, taxi industry, chauffeur industry, makeup artists, so on and so forth. We lost a huge amount of basically anybody who was shut down. And the problem is that it was probably maybe 20-25% of the working population of the country that was shut down. And the other 60-75% were turning around going, what are you on about? Why are you giving it? My own friends, why are you shouting and screaming? And I'm going, well, your only inconvenience is that you have to empty the dishwasher twice a week and you have to do a bit of homework with your kids. My inconvenience is I've lost my entire livelihood. And that was where I became so vocal, because when I see stuff that's going on and you're kind of going, how is that place over there full and allowed to be fine? But we're not. And the biggest point came was in the second year. And this is where you put your mad hat on and all this kind of stuff. The first summer we were back open the end of June. Zero vaccine. Nobody vaccinated. Everybody trading away, everything fine, so on and so forth. Next year, when we're about 70-75% vaccinated at the start of June, they turn around and they go, no, we got to wait until the end of July before restaurants and bars can open. But you can stay in hotels. That's fine. And you can eat in their restaurants and you can drink in their bars. And we're looking at our industry, the bar and restaurant industry, which has been decimated, simply decimated in the last 2-3 years. And we're kind of going, it makes no sense. And I actually got Leo Varadkar to say it in the Shannon, and I got Micheál Martin to say it in the Dáil. We have no, and this is very important, we have no scientific proof that it's any more dangerous to eat in a standalone bar or restaurant as opposed to a hotel bar and restaurant, but we're going to do it anyway.
And that was the bizarrest thing about it. And sorry, Graham, you know, when you come back to some of the silly stuff, we could say mistakes were made, and particularly at the early part of COVID when we were unsure about what was going on. I was, like everybody else, I was frightened at the start too when Leo stood on the steps in Washington. But, you know, after a year or so, when we had a fair idea what the mortality rate was, that it was reasonably low for those who were over the age of 70, slightly higher than the flu, for those under the age of 70, lower than the flu. We knew all of that at that stage, but yet we were still behaving like it was the bubonic plague. We were still coming out with silly stuff, Graham, like you had to have a 9 euro meal or you weren't allowed out. I mean, that's silly nonsense that was coming out, and nobody was questioning it.
But they were. The 9 euro meal thing, that was fucking stupid. And you know me, I'm about as left as you can fucking get. And that was dumb. I've yet to hear anyone anytime recently argue otherwise.
The vaccine passports to get into restaurants and bars, when we now know that even if you are vaccinated or not vaccinated, you're just as less likely to spread or transmit the virus. So that was unnecessary, and all it did was turn people against each other.
But the difference in vaccinated or unvaccinated is what's going to happen potentially to you after the fact.
And again, that's been questioned by the best scientists in the world all over the country. There's yays and nays in relation to that. So, you know, and greater people than us.
No, the vast majority of scientific consensus is that the vaccines work.
I'm talking about the transmission aspect of it.
Yeah, that's because you want to ignore the other part.
By the way, Graham, I got the vaccinations. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I got vaccinated. You know, there are people out there who didn't get them. And by the way, I say to those people, that's your choice. I don't want to take that choice away from people. But there was a time, Graham, where we wanted to take that choice away from people. It was suggested in the political circles that we make it mandatory, but they just legally couldn't
there
do it.
There was no serious suggestion. That
yes, there was. Yes, there was there serious. Was yes, not. There was serious suggestion. They legally just couldn't
not.
Do it. I can
there
tell
no,
you, if
no
they could legally
could
mandate it, they would have. Anyway, they mandated masks, didn't they?
It was never happening, and you know it. Even people like me and you, who could be ridiculously pro-vaccine, and I am pro-vaccine, I'd be one of the first persons objecting to being, you can't mandate vaccines like that.
Okay, what do you say to people like Paul and many other restaurateurs and bar owners, hospitality, DJs, bands, everybody who basically had to be on the move or in a public place to work, who literally lost their livelihoods for the second longest lockdown in the world?
From what I understand.
Well, he didn't lose his... No, he didn't lose his livelihood. He still has it, thank God.
It was damaged, yeah, that's right.
It was badly damaged. I'm sure the man suffered financially. I don't have to speak for him, by the way.
Yeah. Should there have been better support from the government? Absolutely. Should their plans have made more fucking sense? Yeah. Again, you're not going to have me on here with you defending Fianna Fáil being a killer to Greens. Fuck a lot of them. But again, look, did they have to shut down? Yes. They did.
For the length of time that we shut down?
No. Did they make mistakes? Yes, they did. Am I qualified enough as an immunologist to say this exact date is when it should have reopened? I'm not, and I'm not going to pretend I am.
But why did... Why did we put Paul out of business longer than most other countries?
Sorry, no, the connection isn't great.
I said, why did we put Paul and people like Paul out of business for longer than nearly every other country in the world?
Well, Paul isn't out of business. He's
well, we
out of business.
We put him out of business.
He wasn't put out of business.
For a period of time, he was.
Paused and it damaged his income. It did. I'm not.
Okay, I'm sorry. There's cars whizzing by somebody there. Yeah, sorry. That's why it's hard to hear. Sorry, Paul. How long were you closed for, Paul, in total? Yeah,
thanks. I love hearing somebody tell me I wasn't put out of business when I was for about 18 months out of 24. Every restaurant was shut in the country. Every pub was shut for even more than that because we got to open the first year, but pubs didn't. And it wasn't until the second year that I actually realized, first year, I was, oh, thank God, we're open as restaurants. And, okay, the pubs, poor them. Until it happens to the restaurant when hotels were allowed open and we weren't. And I was going, oh, my God, I'm such a dick for being delighted we got to open last year and we didn't get to, and the pubs didn't. And, I mean, so when you say we weren't put out of business, so here's why we were put out of business. A lot of restaurants are gone already. A lot of restaurants have closed up because they could not handle the financial burden. And people will come around and go, oh, you got your bag of silver. You see my Twitter feed. You know the crap I get on. You got your bag of silver. You got your silver coins. What people got was 350 euro, right? And everyone turns around, but you got 350 euro a week. That's your problem. And you got supplemented. Your rates were cut off. And you got grants and you got everything given to you. The problem was that the majority of staff are earning far more than 350 euro. So what happened was is they stayed on for 3 months, 6 months, and they said, listen, what's the story? Are we going to be open again? Because they just shut us down again. I can't sustain my livelihood like this. I have a wife and kids to support. I have a mortgage to pay. I'm really sorry, but I'm going to go down and work in the local supermarket because they're paying me probably not as good as I was getting here in the restaurant, but a lot better than my 350. And more importantly, I'm out and I'm working. So we've lost a huge amount of resource that has gone into other industries because they shut us down for as long as they did.
Okay.
In the second biggest lockdown, they closed us for 9 months. And not only did they close us for 9 months, they didn't have the decency to let us know when we were going to be allowed open until I forced their hand by coming out with the plan today. I'm opening up the same time as hotels are opening up, because this is absolutely not.
Okay, well, hang on for a second. Let me just go to Morris as well. Stay there, Paul. Morris, you're in Ireland. You're in the Niall Boylan podcast. How do you, Morris?
Hi, how are you doing? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, Morris. Yes, you're out and about somewhere there, but go on. Do you think it was all? Okay, do you think it was all worth it?
I don't know. I think that we lost too many elderly people. I think there was too many people that weren't looked after. They didn't help to cope with us. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people lying in graves, wrapped in double bags, never got a proper grave, never got a proper send-off. Ironically, I got my reminder. You have a compromised immune system. You want to go for your spring booster before the end of May. But I don't think I'll be putting any more of it into my body.
So you've decided you're not getting any more, no?
No, I've had enough. I've had enough, and I mean to say, I was well until, you know, they said to me, like, they're calling me a compromised immune system just because I've got a stent in my heart. I don't understand that.
Well, you do have a heart condition. Now, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to give you any advice on whether you should or shouldn't, but that's your decision.
One of the arteries was a bit narrow, and they put a stent in to let the blood flow through.
Okay, but I'm not going to disagree with you in relation to the elderly people of this country. For that year and a half period, you had people standing outside windows watching their mothers and fathers die, and I'm just so glad my mother and father were already dead 10 years previous to that, because if they had been in that condition, I'd have gone through the window. Wild war horses wouldn't have stopped me being at their bedside, but sadly people ended up in that situation and not even allowed to go to their funerals. That was dreadful.
Exactly. I watch programs on the telly about carers that look after people and try to give them the best send off they could.
What was it, six people were allowed at a funeral? Wasn't that the limit? Look, I think
this man died in a home in Dublin. He was double bagged plastic. The girl that was looking after him got him a suit, put a suit on him, they double bagged him. And she was the only one that travelled up with the hearse to Sligo. That's all who turned up at this man's funeral.
It's sad, isn't it?
It's terrible, sad. And there's people out there that are grieving now with broken hearts. You know why? Because they couldn't give their loved ones the send off they deserved.
And do you think after the 2 years, looking back in hindsight, when we see that thankfully it wasn't as dangerous as we initially thought it was going to be, do you think that you have lost faith in the information given to you by the state, by RTE? By other media, which sensationalised, let's be clear, they sensationalised it. Have you lost faith in them because of that?
I won't be trusting anybody in power again because of the way they treated us and what they've done to us. And of course, we're very, like you said, we're very go down and bend the knee and do what the government tells you. I think we were too submissive to them. And we believed everything they told us. I don't think that we've got the whole truth. I hope there's an inquiry. But at the end of the day, if there is an inquiry, unfortunately, who's going to pay for it? The taxpayer. I'll make my own decisions from now on, because I have a brother who has a really bad health system situation, right? And he withdrew into himself unreasonable. He's only 71, right? He's 9 years older than me. And he completely withdrew into himself. He practically became a herbivore. If I stay in the corner, if I don't go out, if I don't let anybody in the house, I won't die. He was terrified.
Yeah, people were terrified, particularly elderly people were. And by the way, some of them still are terrified. I seen an elderly man the other day in his car, and he had a mask on him driving the car on his own. And I said to myself, he's obviously still concerned. And I understand why people could be like that. Paul, people in restaurants now, they're not still wearing masks. Or do you still get many people wearing masks?
No, I mean, there's one or two, a couple of tourists that will come in from maybe Asian countries or something like that. You'll see them walking up.
Well, they would have worn them anyway, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the majority of people aren't. But I think it's very important as well to understand the whole line of authority which brought us on to where we were with COVID. So the World Health Organization come out and they say, right, lads, this is what we're doing. Our CMO turns around and says, right, this is what we're doing. Our Taoiseach turns around and goes, well, look, he's a medical expert, and if this is all wrong, at least I can turn around and say, well, he told me to say this. I'm no medical expert, so here's what we're going to do. We had one person, killed me to say it, Leo Varadkar, stood up to him.
He was put back in his box the following day.
Absolutely, the following day. But the incredible thing is, if we're in a room full of people and an idiot stands up to talk, nobody is going to stop the idiot talking because everybody will see what an idiot is. But we were never once allowed question. We were never, there was never a two.
Well, if you did, you lost your job. That was the way it was. Yeah. I mean, we've seen doctors, credible doctors, losing their jobs because they questioned the mortality rate and they questioned how dangerous it actually was.
100%. So that leads us to the most important question, is why? Why were we not allowed questioning? Now, I'm not going to for a single second turn around and say I'm more qualified than the previous CMO of this country. However, the guy over there who's out of Harvard is 10 times more qualified than him, and he's saying our CMO is wrong. Why can't we talk with him? Why can't we put him on a debate with the CMO?
Because we weren't allowed. Because we weren't allowed. Because anybody who did that, you were considered to be a dissenting voice. Speaking of dissenting voices, Ben Scallon from Grip Media joins me. Ben, who's a man who questions everything and everybody. Ben, looking at the 2.5 years of COVID-19, do you think we were led astray? Do you think it was worth it? Or do you think we were right to be cautious?
I don't think anybody thinks it was worth it now, whether they will admit it or not. I mean, how many people, be it journalists, politicians and so on, who spent months, years even, demonizing other people for whether they chose to wear the mask or not, whether or not they chose to get this booster or social distancing or whatever it might be. And now virtually nobody adheres to those rules. The overwhelming majority of society has tacitly admitted through their actions and behavior now in the last year or so that they don't really care about it and that the whole thing was kind of a farce. So,
this is what I said earlier on to Professor Bill. I said to Professor Bill Tormey, if we did a test, an antigen test or PCR test on everybody in the population tomorrow, I'm pretty sure we'll find out that thousands of people have COVID-19 or are carrying COVID-19. And you will find out that people are sick. And you'll also find out that one or two people may have passed away in the last day or two with COVID-19. So we're actually in the same place we were in probably 2 years ago. But yet we have no lockdowns, no restrictions, no masks, no nothing. So did we get it wrong then or are we getting it wrong now?
Well, it's pretty clear that it was always going to end up that way. I mean, all of the science that we had at the time and common sense, just even if you weren't somebody of a scientific background, you could just see that this was always going to become endemic. It's like the flu. It affects everybody. It will affect everybody at some point statistically, and that it's just going to be one of those things that we have to live with. We could have told them that back at the start of 2020, and many of us did. But rather than heeding that advice and saying, okay, look, this is an unfortunate virus. It is going to have a negative impact on society to some extent, but we're just going to have to live with that. We insisted on engaging in this absolutely destructive policy that has led to the ruination of so many people's lives. I mean, just there, the Children's Ombudsman this week released a report. And in that report, they talked about how a 10-year-old girl in Ireland named Chloe, I believe, she developed a severe eating disorder where her parents said she had no kind of mental health problems before the pandemic, but that she became obsessed with hygiene. She kind of was exhibiting constant washing of the hands, this type of compulsive behavior. She locked herself in a room. She actually became incontinent because she wasn't eating and was wasting away. She had to be taken to a mental health specialist. And that's just one example. There are so many people around Ireland, old people, young people, kids who have had their mental health seriously damaged by this. And that's before you even get into the economics of it and so on. So what was it all for? The whole thing is an absolute disgrace. I really hope there is some kind of
you do accept that many people did die, of course, with COVID-19 or from COVID-19. You do accept that.
Of course, I accept that people died of COVID-19. I accept that people died of the flu. I accept that even, you know what, I'll even say this. I accept that there was possibly an argument. I mean, I'll put it this way. At the start, before we knew how dangerous it was going to be, I was advocating for a kind of lockdown policy. We didn't have a word for it back then. But I was saying that we should close the borders and seal ourselves off to China back in January of 2020. And this was when we didn't
When those WhatsApp messages were coming out. As I mentioned those earlier on, these are the WhatsApp messages where we've seen people lying dead on the streets of China and people stepping over them, which turned out not to be true, by the way, because that just didn't happen anywhere apart from those WhatsApp messages.
The media was talking about a quote-unquote zombie land in Wuhan and all this type of stuff. And initially, if you don't know better and you hear about that, you go, well, Janie Mack, that sounds very serious. We should do something to stop that coming here. So that was the initial policy of people, I think, who are sensible. And the government at that time, if you remember, Simon Harris, who was health minister at the time, said, oh, no, no, we can't lock down because, sure, it wouldn't do any good anyway. People will just move around within EU travel laws.
And then the next thing out of his mouth the following day was, well, let's just lock down for 2 weeks to flatten the curve. You remember that one?
Exactly. And so it was like a bizarre inversion where when we thought it was dangerous, they didn't want to lock down. And then when we realized it was not, I mean, it was still dangerous, but it was a lot less dangerous than we had thought. And the panic level should have come down in theory. Suddenly, that's when they wanted to signal the alarm bells and put the whole country into an unprecedented state of lockdown. So it really was an inverse of the way you would expect a sensible person to behave. We really lost our minds during that whole period.
Sorry, Paul, you were trying to say something there. Paul Trevoux, restaurateur, you were trying to say something there, Paul. Go ahead. Oh, Paul, are you still there?
Hello?
You wanted to say something, Paul. Sorry, go ahead. Oh, we've lost him. Okay, let me go to James Cullen as well. James, the taxi driver. James, hi.
Let me there for a sec.
Go ahead.
Niall, can you hear me there?
I can, yes, I can hear you now.
Hi, yeah, sorry, Niall, this perception isn't brilliant. Yeah, Niall, I agree with everything, even just what Ben was saying there. Like, it was absolutely crazy what he did. Like, you know, my own industry was absolutely decimated, like most of hospitality, and a lot of it, you know, now it is starting to recover because it's busy now, but... You know, for the bulk of 2 years, our industry was absolutely destroyed. Like, it was decimated. And, you know, as we kind of look back on this now, we realize, like, what the hell were we doing? You know, we destroyed our economy. As Ben also mentioned there about that poor young girl, like, the mental health issues that, you know, these children are going to have over the next probably 5 to 10 years, we haven't seen them. And never mind stuff like the fact that all the cancer diagnosis that we missed, heart problems, you know.
I know, all that is incalculable.
Which will make COVID look like a...
We can't measure that. Unfortunately, that's just incalculable, the damage that we've done to the quality of lives of so many people in relation to... And I mentioned this earlier on, people not getting that knee operation or the hip operation or the diagnosis for cancer or a heart condition, who may end up not living quite as long in their lives. So all that damage we will only see over the next 20 or 30 years. And, you know, simple things like breast cancer screening, cervical cancer screening, prostate cancer screening, all that stopped. Everything stopped. You know, we just didn't have services anymore. It was like the world was going to end. It was like some sort of bloody Armageddon, but it turned out not to be that. And the problem is, you were watching RTE every night at 6 o'clock, and the first thing you were seeing in RTE, how many people are dead today? You know what I mean? And the figures were usually somewhere between 5 and 10. You know, which was not a big deal for 5 or 10 people to die every day. I think, I don't know the exact figure, but I think 50 people die at least in the country every single day of the week. So, I mean, it's quite common for people to die of all sorts of illnesses and diseases. But, I mean, Ben, coming back to media, of course, Grip Media were there asking the questions, thankfully, but very few media outlets were actually asking questions. Why do you think that the media were afraid to engage or afraid to question NPHET or question the government?
We tried to get into a lot of the press briefings to ask the questions that we're asking now when we go to these government press conferences, but there were restrictions on how many people could be in the room due to social distancing. And by a very unusual coincidence, every time we asked, no matter how early we asked or how quickly we got on it, they were at capacity. So I find that a little bit suspicious, but maybe that was the case. Maybe we just couldn't get in. But the end effect of that was that nobody, as you say, was willing, for the most part, to challenge or ask questions, obvious questions. I mean, take this as an example. Almost every modeling prediction that NPHET ever made was totally provably 180 degrees wrong. They'd say cases were going to spike and they would plummet through the floor. They'd say cases were going to level off and they'd spike. They couldn't have been more wrong if they tried. It was like they made factual errors like it was a sport. And never once do I remember Tony Houlihan or any of these figures being confronted about that or said, here, what's going on? Why do you guys not appear to have a handle on which way this is going to go in your supposed field of expertise? So, I think the media really did a disservice to the country during a time of great national crisis.
Just in relation to that, I just wanted to, speaking of Grip Media, you're joined by one of your colleagues, Gary Kavanagh, also from Grip Media. And Gary, I kind of ask you the same questions. The media tended to sensationalize everything. I think a lot of media were guilty of it. I've seen some of the silliest stories over that 2 years. People with red hair more likely to get COVID. People who are taller more likely to get COVID. I mean, you couldn't, I'm sure every journalist was told, just go out and get a COVID story. It doesn't matter what it is. It'll sell the paper. It'll be front page or whatever it is. Do you think there was a level of irresponsibility when it came to journalism?
The problem, I think, for journalists there was this was a very popular topic. People, if you put up anything about COVID, it was going to get reads. And journalism, I mean, is ultimately a business. So you had a situation, I think, where there was a disregard for what it was doing to people. I mean, like the daily death trackers, the endless misery of it all, the focus on incredibly emotionally manipulative areas, I think was largely just done because it made people money and people read it and therefore people did it. And at the same time, you had that combined with very little interest in what was actually being done policy-wise. I mean, Ben was talking about how we couldn't get into any of the press conferences. But at the same time, I talked to journalists who went into those press conferences and just stopped going because they were so pointless. Mm. Politicians were either not taking questions or were not being properly questioned on what was actually going to happen. And to be perfectly blunt, I think one of the things we haven't talked about there is how the media and government started dealing with each other during COVID. Because during the start of COVID, when we got into lockdowns, advertising collapsed. And that had a massive impact on media's revenue. And the government stepped in by taking out all of these public awareness campaigns about COVID, public safety stuff. I'm not saying the government shouldn't have done that, but there were situations where the government ended up contributing massive sums of money to the people who were meant to be questioning them to see if they were behaving appropriately.
100%.
Yeah, and I know there's a little bit of a delay between us, so we're going to be wrapping it up in a second. Sure. Anyway, but. I completely agree with you because from working in radio, in the radio industry, of course, we lost all our advertising, you know, the airlines, the gigs, whatever it was, the festivals, all that advertising completely gone. We had nothing. And we solely, including most of the radio stations, independent and otherwise around the country, relied on the, you know, here's a 1 minute ad for phase one, or here's a 2 minute ad for vaccinations, or here's a 1.5 minute ad, we're going into level five, or whatever it was. And that does put you in a compromising situation whereby you kind of have to agree with it because they're paying your wages. And that was the kind of way it felt, I suppose, for a lot of people in media, that the government are subsidizing us to be in a job. And if we go against them, maybe they'll turn around and they'll take away our money or they won't give us this subsidy anymore. And I suppose you are right. We were, the media was generally compromised.
Well, I can tell you directly that there were situations during the COVID pandemic where Grips had stories that we could back up, that we could prove, that reflected on certain aspects of the government's campaigns or groups who were dealing with the government. And I was explicitly told by certain people that they wouldn't do it and they wouldn't cover it. These were other media organizations because they were worried that those stories would upset the Department of Health. And I don't think the Department of Health had ever said, you know, if you upset us, we're not going to give you your money. It was just the mere fact that these people knew we're getting money from those lads. And it has a chilling effect. You don't want to do something that might upset them. And we saw that with a number of our stories, like the story we did on ISAG, the Zero COVID group, and how we were able to get leaked documents which showed that they were internally saying they had to act to increase fear and uncertainty. We went to multiple other media outlets with that, with the documents. No one would touch it. No one would do it. Now, some of them just disappeared. Some were explicit on why they wouldn't do it. But it was absolutely total silence. Just, we are not going to mention that. Until the Irish Examiner accidentally, I think, got one of them to reveal that actually the documents were real. You know, a year down the line. But you also had, and this I thought was very interesting at the time, one of the things the media never discussed, and it kind of made me think that the media was not treating this as seriously as it should be, is the thing that makes COVID most deadly is age. The second is obesity, it's weight. But there was never any discussion of, oh, we're going to lockdown, we're closing the gyms. Is this actually, like,
are people going to gain weight? Is this actually more dangerous? Mm. It was just throw on the green jersey. This is what the government is doing. Let's not think too much about this. And then in the back of your mind, also, these people are now like a large part of my company's revenue. And it was never going to end well. I mean, you had the former NPHET member, Professor Martin Cormacan, coming out a couple of months ago and saying that even he disagreed with it, that, you know, when his mother was dying in a care home, he wasn't able to go visit her. And he did not think that this follow the science claim had led to this. This was just a group that wasn't being questioned and was just doing things.
And you know what? I was delighted to see Martin Cormacan come out and say that, but the one thing I was disappointed about was that he didn't say it sooner. In other words, why didn't he say it while he was in there? They didn't have any dissenting voices within NPHET. Listen, guys, I'm sorry for cutting everybody short. Paul, James, Gary and Ben, I do apologise for cutting you all short. Slight technical problem there. We had a little bit of a delay towards the end. But we were coming to an end anyway. And we had some very interesting opinions throughout the show, particularly from Professor Bill Tormey. I want to thank my guests, Bill Tormey and obviously Ivor Cummins, who is on earlier on. I should have got Ivan Yates on. Actually, that would have been entertaining, to say the least. Anyway, if you want to WhatsApp or text at any stage, if there's anything you want to discuss, 085 100 2255. That's 085 100 2255. Or you can email me if you want to. It's niall@nileboylan.com. Don't forget, by the way, if you've missed the show or you want to grab it just the audio version without the video and you just want to sit around, hang around, listen to it, you can. If you go to the website, it's usually up on the website by the end of the day, and it's niallboylan.com. Or you can pick it up on Spotify and all the usual platforms. If you want to watch the video again, you can. We take it down at the end of every day from the streams, but you can watch it on the website. Again, it's niallboylan.com. Until then, we'll talk to you again tomorrow at 12, and you never know what we might be talking about. See you then.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085 100 2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.